time, I need to remind all participants for today's conference call. It will be recorded. Thank you, ma'am. You can start your conference at this time.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. This is the Data and Metrics for Policymaking Working Group on the 6th of May, 2014. On the call today, we have Sunny Kitu, Ikepi, Marinelle Roscoe, Anavir Nuwali, Pam Little, Tony Ornato, Graham Bunton, Cheryl Langdon Orr, Andrew Merriam, Caleb Cow, Rudy Vansnick, Jonathan Zuck, Anand Orlik, and Olivi Kuami. We have apologies from Mohammed Diop. From staff, we have Barry Cobb, Steve Chan, Mary Wong, Amy Bivens, and myself, Terry Agnew. I'd like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and back over to you, Jonathan.
Thank you. Hello, everyone, and welcome. We've got a pretty good turnout today, so that's exciting. Is there anything that we need to deal with in terms of statements of interest?
Jonathan, this is Barry. Just to point out to the group, what you see in the AC room is our latest list of working group members. There are a few members that still haven't submitted their SOIs. The secretariat team has sent out warning messages stating that if they aren't submitted by, I think, the end of this week, that they'll be removed from the list. So if you are one of those on the call and listening to this, please be sure to try to get your SOI submitted. Afterwards, then we'll do a final list that we can post into our wiki space for members to reference. Of course, it won't have any email addresses listed there, but it's always a useful reference, especially understanding affiliation. Thank you.
That's right. Well, should we dive in? Barry, did everyone get the email from Barry that was a first cut at answering our template questions for FastFlux? Did people get a chance to look at it? Does anybody have questions? Because I thought what I would do is just ask Barry to start off by giving a kind of an overview of that PDP, and then we might walk through this document and see where we ended up and hopefully open that up for discussion. Does anybody have any questions before that? All right, Barry, you want to take it away?
Will do. Thank you, Jonathan. This is Barry for the record. So basically what we have that you see before you here in the AC room today, I'll share the cleaner version in a moment, but I just wanted to highlight to members, this is, you know, our first take at trying to fill out the analysis form after reviewing this particular effort, FastFlux, which began in 2008 and concluded in 2011. I think, you know, initial takeaways before we get into any details is, you know, for our first version of the analysis document about what questions needed to be asked and the like, seemed to be fairly accurate or, you know, a good pointers to look for things in the particular work products of that working group. I think there was a little bit of redundancy in some of our questions, and we can certainly refine that as we move through here. But what I just wanted to highlight for you with this version, basically, myself and Andrew had also submitted some comments into this form, and just wanted to highlight that we're utilizing track changes. So if other members are interested in submitting any other comments or suggestions to this form, please do send them into the list, and I can incorporate them into the master version similar to what you see here. And we'll be able to track as to who suggested what particular comment and maintain the version control that way. Typically what I do prior to a meeting and sending these documents out, and I do apologize for only getting this out yesterday instead of a couple of days to allow members to absorb this. But what I like to do is send a redline version so that members can see exactly who changed what or suggested what type of text. And then I'll also include a clean version, which is typically the version that we'll review through our conference call, and I'll take notes as appropriate from there and then post the working group call, then I'll send out a revised version that will reflect any changes from working group deliberations. So that's basically all I'll point out to here, other than I did add one additional row or section to the working group report, which is basically kind of just final outcomes, which basically relate specifically to the resolve or resolutions by the GNSO Council when they considered this issue. All right, so now I'll bring up the clean version for us to review through. Make sure I get the right one. And I'm zooming in on this, and now I'm giving members of the AC room, you have control to scroll through the document and zoom in or zoom out how you see fit. If it's not very legible to you, then, of course, we can please reference what I sent out to the mailing list last night. So, Fast Flux Working Group. This working group was initiated by the GNSO Council back in March of 2008, and what sparked this particular effort was based on a report submitted by the FSAC, which was labeled FSAC 025. And normally I would have had that uploaded in here for us to review, but there's really not much that we can change to that particular document, but there are links within here if you want to see more details of that FSAC report. And typically, and I won't be the best historian here, but typically when reports are sent out of FSAC, they're sent broadly across the community, and the various SOs and ACs will absorb those documents and deliberate as necessary based on the type of issue and its relevance to that particular SO and AC. At this particular time frame in 2008, which is kind of just prior to when I even knew what ICANN was, there was a really big debate and discussion within the community about the various types of abuses that were occurring on the Internet. Fast Flux is just one component of that. And in very, very simplified terms, and I'm nowhere near an expert on this issue of Fast Flux, but in short, what the FSAC report determined is that there were legitimate and illegitimate uses of Fast Flux, and Fast Flux meaning that a particular domain name that is registered goes through a very fast series of changes to its name servers. The legitimate uses, I won't get into the details, but the illegitimate use was basically to mask where the name was being hosted and obviously mask the abuses that it was trying to distribute, such as malware, botnets, and et cetera. So the FSAC built this report, and they did, in my view at least, they did a very good job of describing what the problem meant for the community and certainly focused in on the overall abuse of this particular feature within the DNS. Their essential outcome from the document is that more research and into looking at this issue should be performed. And while this affects not only the generic space, I believe it's also an issue for the country code space. But like I said, there was definitely a lot of dialogue during that time about overall abuses of Internet names. And so the GNSO Council started to deliberate the issue. Basically, in the GNSO Council's discussion, it was agreed by the counselors at that time that staff should dive into the issue a little bit more, and thus initiated staff to create an issue report. That issue report, I believe, was submitted to out for public comment on around March of 2008. And shortly after that, the council...
Yes, Kwame, it's me.
Let's Coyote, if that's you, please make sure your phone is on mute. Or if not, whoever, please make sure your phone's on mute. So with that, the issue report was submitted, as well as public comments that were initiated. One thing I neglected to look at was how many public comments were submitted. But basically, the final issue report was then deliberated on by the council. And I think there's a couple of takeaways at this point. Staff is usually responsible for creating the issue report. Then, of course, you know, we incorporate any public comments to finalize that issue report. But one of the key takeaways out of an issue report is that there are a series of recommendations, sometimes one, sometimes multiple, depending on the particular topic. But they're recommendations that the GNSO Council and the GNSO should consider, especially when making a determination to initiate a PDP or any kind of working group effort to further address that particular issue. So I think of what is of note of the ESSAC report leading up to the issue report is that, again, I'll reiterate, the ESSAC report did a very good job of describing the problem, but based on the contents of that ESSAC report, it didn't list out much data to help describe the extent of the problem. It was more a qualitative analysis than a quantitative analysis, and I think that would have had some of that data been included in the ESSAC report. That may have been much more informative to the GNSO Council when they determined to initiate a PDP. What we, in terms of the issue report itself, the one of the main recommendations from staff is that additional metrics and due diligence were required on this particular issue. So you'll notice in row two, about the second paragraph, I won't read through all of this, but essentially staff recommends that the GNSO sponsor additional fact-finding and research to develop any best practice guidelines concerning FastFlux hosting, et cetera. Of course, making reference back to the ESSAC 25 report, and then making note that staff resources can be made available to the council as they see necessary to explore this issue further. Within the issue report itself, as you move down through some of the language in row two, they created also a series of questions that may have first started from the ESSAC report but were incorporated into the issue report as to try to really get an extent or an understanding of the extent of this particular problem, you know, again, outlining the legitimate versus illegitimate uses and trying to quantify the issue itself, how community members are involved in this issue, from registries to registrars to registrants, and what are the aspects of, you know, who's really ultimately affected, and what kind of enforcement mechanisms could be put in place to try to mitigate the particular abuse. So ultimately what happened is, I think even counter to the staff recommendation here of obtaining more data before forming the PDP, the GNSO Council did vote for approval to form the PDP, which then started approximately in April. And typically for our newcomers here on the working group, typically what happens is after the issue report is deliberated on by the council, they'll make a determination to form a working group or a PDP or non-PDP, after which there's basically a small team that is formed to help establish the charter of what the working group is supposed to accomplish. And then once that charter is approved by the GNSO Council, then the working group will form afterwards and began to deliberate the issues in detail. So on the 29th of May in 2008, the charter was developed and approved by the GNSO Council. And the bottom part of row two is an extract of the primary components of what was to be accomplished by the working group here. And again, it's really asking a series of questions that are trying to determine, you know, what's the extent of the issue and all of the questions that I had mentioned in my previous statements. So moving on through down to the third row, and this is kind of where we get into some of the details about the data and metrics. You know, this was a working group. I think that they met weekly. As Andrew had pointed out, there was definitely plenty of on-list, mailing list activity, as well as weekly working group conference calls. I think at that time there were, it looked as though there were even several council members that were heavily involved in this effort as well. I think the real takeaway from the overall working group effort is that they still struggled trying to grasp the severity of the problem, and I think that that was more confounded by the fact that in terms of not knowing exactly where to get the data from to even try to make sense of how big the particular issue is. But you'll notice in a couple of the annexes of the final report is that there are references to two studies that were initiated, and they were two separate research firms, one by Arbor and the other one from Karmasphere. Unfortunately, the research conducted by Arbor, the link in the report was broken, and I tried Google searching to see where there were other details or if I could find that report, and I didn't succeed in trying to do that. I'm sorry, I didn't succeed in finding it. However, the Karmasphere research did dive into some of the details within that particular annex of the issue. And I didn't try to become an expert in analyzing the graphs, but at least there was some data to try to make reference to the issue being discussed. But I think ultimately it still wasn't concrete enough for any particular kinds of consensus policy recommendations to be developed. And ultimately when we go through the resolutions of those recommendations, they were really more on to the best practices side. And I think another aspect of the confusion, I wouldn't call it confusion, but they're trying to develop a fine line between what is a legitimate use versus a illegitimate use of FastFlux was difficult, and how can you distinguish between some of those was a factor as well. Moving on to 3.11 that talks about some of the primary sources of data. Again, you know, it was the SSAC report that kicked this off. There were the annexes about some FastFlux metrics. There was also, just like with any working group, as to which we'll even do eventually once we have more information about the issues we're trying to deliberate on. It's a pretty much standard protocol that we reach out to all the SOs and ACs and ask their input on the types of issues that are being discussed, as well as any other information that the working group is trying to help them understand the breadth of the issue and how it affects the different communities that are active here. So I'll continue moving on down through Section 4, which again kind of, I think this is kind of where some of the redundancy comes into play with some of our questions, but I don't really find that too much of an issue at this point. It's better to have more than less. But it does refer back to the charter and, you know, that staff had made the recommendation about trying to collect more data. The council did make the determination that the working group should be there to guide staff to be able to collect more data, but I don't think it was ultimately successful. Then moving into Section 5, kind of starts to touch on the final report and some of the recommendations that were listed in there, pretty much ending up with Row 7, which I think is it's important for us to consider because while the resolutions and recommendations don't necessarily or not necessarily directly align to metrics for understanding the problem, I think one component that when the working group deliberates these issues is this aspect of continuous improvement, or hopefully what we'll start to understand after reviewing these previous efforts is there were certain recommendations made as a result of this effort. Some of them did result in consensus policies, and I think beyond just the working group, it might behoove us to also review the particular outcomes and measuring the effectiveness of those consensus policies. Now, I don't believe it'll be our duty to say yes or no, Tedner did or didn't do what it was supposed to do, but more in the abstract of was there data there or a framework in place to measure whether a particular consensus policy did what it did or didn't do. So I'll wrap up here. I'm not going to read through all of the resolve statements and or recommendations from the GNSO Council resolution. So this effort basically concluded at the top of 2011. So it was almost 3 years in the making to come to these set of recommendations. Just at a high level, looking at the resolutions, what the maker of this particular resolution, what they tried to accomplish is the first level of bullets, A through G, are the six recommendations that were extracted out of the final report. And then there's a sub-bullet for each one of those recommendations that talks about the possible implementation of those. This resolution was unanimously adopted by the council. And, again, for each one of them, it has a particular note about what should be done to address this particular recommendation. And so to close off this conversation, there was another effort running in parallel to Fast Flux, which is the Registration Abuse Policies Working Group, which is the working group that created the very working group we're working on now. Wow, that sounds... the proposed implementation was actually referring a lot of the Fast Flux recommendations over to the RAPWG because their particular charter was much more focused about a series of abuses that are occurring in the generic namespace, all the way from cyber squatting and some of the recommendations dealing with a review of the UDRP, to defining what malware and botnets are, that the RAPWG did spend time trying to further define and discuss the area of Fast Flux based on some of the recommendations that came from that working group. And so what I tried to provide for the working group members here is in the comments section to the right, and basically the outcomes of the RAPWG as they related back to the recommendations that were created here for the Fast Flux. And I think for the most part, these were softer recommendations that, the RAPWG should review and discuss this further. They weren't full tangible recommendations, go do X and come up with Y and see if there's any consensus policies. I think ultimately what the outcome of the RAPWG was mostly recommendations towards best practices, which of course are not policy binding from a contractual standpoint. So after which there were a series of resolution statements or resolutions from the GNSO Council to address the recommendations out of the RAPWG. So with that, I've rambled for a good 20 minutes. Hopefully there are a few questions that I can try to answer, and if not, hopefully there is some dialogue or suggestions about other sources of data that may have been useful for the working group there, or any other ideas that the group has. And I'll stop there. So, Jonathan, back to you. Thank you.
Sorry, I was on mute. Thanks, Barry. Thanks for that summary. As taking a step back from the details of this, though, it can be said relatively uncategorically that the problem was never ultimately quantified, nor do we know now whether or not the situation is any better or any worse. Does that make sense, Barry?
Yes. In fact, I should have mentioned this, but since the conclusion of the RAPWG, I haven't seen or heard the community discuss this issue any further, nor have I don't recall it in any of the future SSAC reports. Cheryl raised her hand, so maybe she has more information.
Cheryl, go ahead.
Thanks, Cheryl, for the record. If memory serves, one of the things that damped down the issue of fast flux was action taken by a couple of industry players and led by one in particular, which happened, I think, if memory serves properly, the PIR registry. And that was shifting a monetary mechanism, which basically made the ability for black hat wearing players, those that were likely to be doing bad things with fast flux, because fast flux can be used for good or ill, and making it financially less attractive for it to be used as for nefarious means. And so I guess by putting that on the table, what I wanted to raise is a caution as we look at measuring success of outcomes, because whilst there would be a nexus, so an interface between the community and ICANN getting engaged and interested and looking at fast flux and Spamhaus and various other people focusing on it, it wasn't necessarily the recommendations of the working group that may have made the most significant difference to it being still a problem. What, however, did happen was because the working group and the community were looking at things, pressures were brought to bear and other sectors into the calculations, and they were meaningfully, serious money was likely to be lost by people who only wanted to use it for ill. And I think we just need to be cautious about how we measure outcomes as well. And, of course, you also need to make a value judgment then on does it matter whether a success, in inverted commas, is directly aligned in a one-to-one ratio or tangentially affected by recommendations or actions of a working group. Thank you.
Thanks, Cheryl. I guess before I go to you, Barry, I'm interested in following up with your point that there might have been some unrelated response that was motivated by the working group, and so the actions of the working group may not have led to a result, but the actions motivated by the working group may have had a result by changing the financial incentives. I guess, again, though, we're still faced with the issue that if we didn't quantify the problem, that even now we don't know whether or not even those things were effective.
We can't measure. All you can look is at is the things like how many how many names are dropped and picked up in what sort of refractory period and things like that. So, you know, it's a good reason why proper metrics should be at least established. They may not be the only metrics you end up using, but you do need to have an establishment of some metrics as early in the process as possible, and hopefully even some standardised stuff. I know, Jonathan, you'll think that's a good thing, but everyone else needs to understand that as well. Thanks.
Well, no, but it's beyond that. It's also a commitment to go back and look later to see whether the recommendations of the working group or, as you say, other things that people might point to that have happened since have addressed the problem. Because right now we could be assuming the problem was addressed by changes to financial incentives, but we don't really know.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I guess that's, so there's two parts. One is about getting a baseline, and the other is about making a commitment to double back. Barry, go ahead.
Thank you, Jonathan. This is Barry. Yeah, just to piggyback on your point, Jonathan, and I guess really even more specifically from a GNSO nerd's perspective of curiosity, PIR, not to mention any specific names here, but if they were the ones that did shift the monetary mechanism to make this a less attractive abuse, I am curious, did it become a best practice across all the registries, or most of them? And I don't know how we go about answering that question, and it's really not the remit of this working group. But, you know, it is interesting that after 2012 into 2011, I've never heard of the issue again. We still hear about malware and botnets and those kinds of things, but we definitely don't hear it in reference to FastFlux.
Barry, Cheryl here. What I will do is I think we can go back into PIR's world, but that's more to satisfy curiosity than anything else. The facts, I guess, it's not so much establishing the facts, it's establishing the fact that sometimes satellite activities happen around working groups which have tangible and either positive or negative results, and we need to be open to measuring those in some way, shape or form.
Which is an important point, for sure. I mean, and so that would suggest looking at those elements as well, but also trying to determine whether or not the overall problem that was identified in the initial issue report has been mitigated anything, right? I guess
Barry, if you want to dig down into it in super nerd mode, you probably should look at PIR's restock fee.
Sorry, their what fee?
Restock.
Oh, restock. Okay. I'm kind of curious again from the nerd perspective, and if I do find anything, I'll share it with the list. But again, it's not necessarily our scope to make that determination. And so I think personally, Jonathan, you pretty much summarize the entire aspect to this is that we need to quantify the issue up front, and then your specific keyword is to make the commitment to circle back and to measure the effectiveness of those outcomes.
Other people have comments or questions? About this report or its implications. I mean, I guess I find myself most focused on 311, which is that it feels like that line from Casablanca of round up the usual suspects in many respects, more so than a kind of rigorous attempt to quantify the problem. Olivier, are you having trouble speaking?
I've written it on the Adobe.
Okay. Do you want to go ahead?
Yeah.
And then Tony.
I've noticed that the problem, the issue about the blackfish is older than 5 years now. So there is no any data data or metrics who could show us exactly where we are now. That's my question.
And that's a good question. I think that what we're doing is going through these various case studies to see, and like this one is somewhat old, it's really to see whether or not this was an example where the collection of baseline information would have been helpful in identifying the scope of the problem, the severity of the problem, and also give us a means to measure the success of any recommendations that are made. So our job isn't to judge this as much as to use it as an example of how we might do things differently going forward. So right now, I don't think that we're in a position to go out and do the research on fast flux. It's more a question of whether or not this is a good example of an area in which a more rigorous application of data would have been beneficial. Does that make sense?
Yes, I'm satisfied now. Thank you.
Okay. Tony, do you want to go ahead?
Yeah, hi, Jonathan. I'm just wondering, this is Tony Honorato for the record. I'm wondering if we can get a little bit more insight, if you know, into how the polling mechanism worked, how that data was collected that's referenced, for example, in 311. From the various ICANN constituency groups. I thought in looking at the report that some of the questions bearing on, for example, how many registrars are affected and how they might be affected seemed to be something that wasn't easily translatable into a polling device. Can you guys talk a little bit about how that data was collected, the mechanism for doing that, how broadly the questioning vehicle goes out, so on and so forth? Does that make sense?
Jonathan, you're on mute.
I guess I'm on mute. Barry, do you want to go ahead?
I think I can at least answer the second part and maybe the first part of your question, Tony. The first part about the breadth of the questions that go out, certainly the request for information across the SOs and ACs is limited to pretty much the ICANN community. I guess in some ways that could tie into some of the MSI recommendations, the multi-stakeholder innovation group that was put together about trying to crowdsource some of these issues. And that's certainly in our remit to kind of take a look at some of those as possible options for the working group. But I do believe at this particular time the breadth was probably as far as the ICANN community. Now, there were two research reports, for the second half of your question, there were two research reports in the annex of this, but it wasn't clear to me how those came to light. I'm not sure. I'll probably have to go try to talk to some of the veterans that were around at this time to understand how that made its way into the report, unless somebody else read it and caught it and I didn't. But so I'm not sure if staff asked for the research to be done or if it was these entities that existed out there that were just taking that particular topic on task themselves and caught wind of the particular effort any issues being discussed with Fast Flux. But good questions.
Rudy, go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Jonathan. Well, one of the concerns that I have, and having an experience now with working group and a PDP working group that has been recharted, is the complexity. If you have working groups being recharted, you have to go back to the initial working group to try to understand why that one didn't get the result as required. And at the end, you have to find the balance between the previous ones and the new ones. So I think that's something we have to keep in the back of our mind to figure out how to get the right matrix out of these situations.
Yes, so I mean, I don't know if we're talking about rechartering a working group necessarily, unless it was found that the proposals made by that working group didn't lead to the results that they believed it would. So, I mean, I think that's the environment that might exist if with more data, is to understand whether or not the recommendations worked or if the problem was still a problem. So again, we're not talking specifically about Fast Flux now or rechartering it, but trying to create that baseline going forward. Tony, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Jonathan. It's Tony Honorato again. Thanks, Barry, for that last answer. I wanted to ask a follow-up on that, which is, do we have access to, or can we get a sample of what that, for lack of a better word, questionnaire looked like to the constituency groups? And the reason I'm going at this is I think the mechanism for gathering the data is almost as important, if not as important in some ways, as the questions asked, as the data sought. With an insufficient vehicle for asking the constituency groups, for example, for this kind of data, the fight is almost lost at the outset. So I guess what I'm thinking is, I'm wondering whether or not part of our, and I don't know how much this falls in our remit, so I'm just sort of throwing this out there, how much of what we need to do, or whether or not we need to have sort of a subgroup thinking about the most efficient ways in which to disseminate these sorts of questionnaires to the ICANN community or subsets of the ICANN community, say the registrars, for example, so that we can guarantee that we're going to get sufficient feedback in numbers and in diversity. I don't think we're looking for statistical significance in the responses, but, you know, I think that your data is almost only as good as the sources it comes from, and I wonder how much we're tasked with and or thinking about taking the vehicles that were used in the past, the type of questionnaire or something, and improving on that. So I don't know, it's kind of a long question, but I solicit your all's thoughts on that.
Well, Tony, thanks for your question. I'll take the chair's prerogative to say that I think it's squarely within our remit to explore those kinds of questions as well. I mean, I think in many instances it might be a two-part process to talk to the community about potential sources of data, some of which they may have or believe that others have, and that some of which are internal to the community and some that are external to the community, and then it would be a phase two, if you will, to go out and try and tap those sources of data. So I think there's a kind of an informal poll that happens initially about where might we look for answers to these questions, and then the second place would be to actually try to go out and search for the answers. And I definitely think that's what we ought to be exploring. Barry,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you, Jonathan. This is Barry. So, question A, Tony, is there is a copy of the questionnaire and the feedback from the SOs and ACs, and I believe that is Annex 1 and 2 of the report.
Okay.
The caveat there, and guilty as charged, I didn't read through all of the responses in detail because there's quite a bit there. I think that, you know, in regards to at least this particular issue, is it's much more technical and, you know, probably much more within, you know, caters to the audience of registries and registrars that are dealing with this on the back end. You know, clearly there is some input from the non-technical community to understand the impacts. So I think that was maybe kind of the one barrier. Secondarily, the SOAC questionnaire request for input was, again, much more qualitative than quantitative. In terms of that kind of feedback, and then definitely agree with Jonathan's response. You know, I do believe it's in our remit to at least ask those questions and put deliberation to it, and if a particular recommendation surfaces that still remains in our scope, then yes, it's definitely in our remit.
Well, Ted. This is Tony. Thanks for that, Barry. Thanks for that, Jonathan. I guess I'm sort of thinking ahead more than I'm really thinking about the fast flux scenario to how it is we can maximize the dissemination. So I agree it's a two-phase thing, identifying potential sources and then circulating to those sources the most accessible vehicle, the most likely to be responded to vehicle. So I guess really I'm thinking ahead as much as anything else about the best ways to maximize response rates, in a sense, from the relevant communities. But that's very helpful. I appreciate that. I just want to think on that further. But I think that is obviously an important part of what we're doing is trying to create the greatest efficiencies in disseminating our questions to the relevant communities. So thanks for that.
Tony, it's Jonathan.
Yes.
Would you be interested in taking a closer look at just particularly that the questionnaire side to that, thinking of it as the qualitative phase one, if you will, of data collection, in which we are, in fact, amongst other things, seeking potential sources of data and see whether or not the questions looked appropriate for trying to elicit that type of feedback. Again, I think the idea would be that somebody would come back and say, you know who collects data like this is Spam House. Oh, good. And then second phase is, do we have money to go buy the data from Spam House, for example, right? So, I mean, I think that first phase, which is what this 311 really refers to, is just going out and asking the usual suspects within the community, what do you guys think, and can you think of areas where data would be available? And it could very well be that they weren't sufficiently data-centric questions that were being asked in the qualitative phase. Is that
right.
Interesting to you?
Yeah, I mean, I'd be happy to look at that. I guess the predicate question really is, are the usual suspects, is that too restrictive? Is there a way to elicit responses from a group beyond just the usual suspects, or are we necessarily reliant on the usual suspects because they're the ones paying attention, basically, to these sorts of ICANN initiatives? You know, the concern as we get down the road, it seems to me, and we're looking for potentially more and more precise bits of data or something that is a bit unique, that by going to the usual suspects, well, obviously we're missing out on opportunities, maybe asking, as all these new entities crop up in and around the industry and they're crunching numbers and data differently, how are we able to enlarge the pool of people we might be asking of in phase one? So, well, that's a question I think we should take up as part of that. But yeah, I could certainly
for sure. And And I guess, and this is Jonathan again for the record, I guess, Tony, that we need to look at it holistically, and polling the usual suspects is only one part of the process. The staff do initial research about potential sources of data.
Sure.
And the group itself may, when they get unsatisfactory responses, decide to do their own research on potential sources of data. So there's probably three different groups, if you will, looking into what potential sources of data might be. And then the next thing would be trying to acquire that data, right, which is a separate
right.
process altogether. So, I mean, I do think it makes sense to look at the polling of usual suspects in the context of that will always be done. What is the best, most efficient way for us to do it? Barry, did you want to answer that as well?
Yes, just real quickly, and I see that we only have 5 minutes left. As I mentioned in the chat, and I'll restate it here, I think in terms of what Tony is bringing up, does directly correlate with several recommendations of the multi-stakeholder innovation panel that was put together. So I will take the action to send the output from that group for the working group to review. I'll warn you up front that it is a landslide of information, a lot of which I still haven't even got through. But there are some intriguing recommendations from them in terms of taking a problem very much like this and looking at options to crowdsource the issue to collect a particular data. And I think that there's an opportunity to perhaps leverage some of that. And certainly the council is deliberating the outcome of that MSI group as well as to how, because a lot of it does directly correlate with our policy development processes. I'll send that out to the list, and, we won't have any near-term kind of deadline to have it all read by, but it makes for great bedtime reading stories.
Cheryl, did you have a comment?
Thank you. I did have my hand up. I am away from the AC room. I'm worrying about Barry and his bedtime reading now. I just wanted to be absolutely supportive of where Tony was heading, but I also wanted to suggest, and I'm glad I came in after Barry, that the crowdsourcing and looking beyond the usual suspects is important. So some open-ended or very inclusive analysis questions are probably going to be useful to build into future modelling. And let me give you an example on something that would be difficult to measure, but probably, because of lack of data, but probably could be sourced externally, and that is if we looked at the changes over the same period of time as FastFlux was a major issue, so circa 2006-7 through to 12, where it doesn't seem to be as much of an issue. And that's the change in the banking industry on mechanisms to avoid credit card fraud, because credit card fraud was one of the primary sources of paying for your name to then exploit FastFlux for nefarious, malicious purposes. So we'd have to very much look away from the usual suspects to pick up that data. So it's kind of like our data doesn't exist, but data itself exists in parallel that will probably have a direct effect on the outcomes. Thanks.
That's a good point. Anybody else want to speak up at this point? Barry's your hand still up or up again?
This is a new one since we only
okay,
have one minute left. So if you don't mind me taking over for just a second. So if working group members have additional input regarding the FastFlux issue, please send it to me, and I'll be sure to incorporate it into this document. But I think we'll close the conversation on that one. What you'll see in the AC room is our next homework assignment, which is the post-expiration domain name recovery PDP. This one will be a little bit more intriguing. It almost ran in parallel to FastFlux. It was a true PDP, and it did have consensus policy recommendations that were implemented by staff and out to the contracted parties and became, new language within the contract. So this one will probably be a little bit more intense than the FastFlux version that we had. And I'm also more familiar with the key players of that group as well. And so if after our initial review we find it necessary to maybe invite Alan, who was the former chair of that working group, or any of the other members, we can certainly give that a try as well, as long as we're prepared to ask them the appropriate questions. So I had the action to send the new Pedner assignment out to the list, and I'll make sure that that gets out so that we can review it at our next meeting.
Thanks, Barry.
Barry, I'm not going to hand my homework in on that, thanks. I suffered enough through Pedner. You can ask me questions, though.
So we need it most from you, Cheryl.
You'll get opinion, but I'm not bloody reading it again.
Well, just look at the form. I mean, that is a set of questions, so you don't need to read it again. You already know it. So
I will respond rather than read. That's fine.
No, I will add to Barry's suggestion: as you go through this, remember to look at the form itself and see if there's questions that come up that the form doesn't address, or the refinements that should be made in how we're analyzing these case studies. If there's questions that we're not asking, such as Tony's, about what is essentially a two-phase, exploration of existing data, right? And maybe that needs to be divided into two parts, for example. So get your comments to us, of course, on the framework for understanding these case studies as well.
Yep.
I know Barry wants to talk about the meeting schedule, so.
Yep.
Cheryl, did you want to say something real quick?
Oh, I was just going to say, remember that Pedner is one of those where there was a hesitation of industry players to share information, and that's something that we have to tease out separately. That's all. Thanks.
Yes, that is very true, and is partly responsible for why there's a specific aspect to this effort in terms of collaborating with contracted parties on that data, and trying to build a framework for future reference with future endeavors. So thank you, Jonathan. Our last agenda item is our recurring meeting schedule. I don't think it'll be a surprise, but the last doodle poll that I did to try to make this meeting for the 29th of May imploded intensely. It was very difficult to find even a remotely common time across all the players. So we're still going to stick to the alternating or biweekly schedule, but there is one possible change that I'll bring up here on the call real quickly, and also I have the action item to send this out to the list to see if this is acceptable to the working group. First and foremost, our next meeting will be on the 20th at 20 UTC, and I'll make sure that we get a notice sent out so that you can get it on your calendars right away. I know that this time is not perfect for everybody. However, it has been consistent enough that we get a number of participants on here, which is a good thing. However, what I will be sending out to the list is a proposal where it's kind of taking on our previous discussions of a divide and conquer. And the general premise is that we will actually have weekly meetings, but week one will be a time that is accommodative to the Asia-Pacific region. And then the very next week, week two, is accommodative to the European and East Coast region. And what we'll try to maybe do is split our effort, especially in the review of some of these past working group efforts. And the call time will still continue to be on Tuesdays. And I haven't tried to determine an exact time, but it would be something like week one would be at 8 a.m., and then week two is at 8 p.m. And so then it's up to the working group members to pick whichever time is the most reasonable for you to attend. And if let's assume that your 8 a.m., for example, wasn't a reasonable time, and so you pick week two. It's just that we ask that the members that don't attend that call that you do listen to the MP3 and contribute on the list to that particular topic being discussed. So I'll try to establish this in more detail on the list. Again, it's only a proposal. It's up to the working group ultimately. Jonathan may kill me because now I'm doubling up his duty that he didn't expect. But outside of that, I'm running into a brick wall trying to figure out a time that's accommodative to all members. So this was the middle ground that I could think of. So with that, I think I'm done, Jonathan.
Oh, you're done all right.
That sounds almost threatening. Hang on.
Well, don't worry. I certainly wouldn't kill him until we're done with his working group, though.
Oh, phew. That's all right then, Jonathan. I can support you on that one. That's all right.
So, folks, do give that some consideration. We really don't want to lose momentum by talking about things too infrequently, and we want to try to maximize participation. So keep an eye open for that email and give your feedback as to whether that could work for you and, as far as the different timings that are essentially 12 hours apart. And maybe we can split up some of the work that we need to do. And then that, in combination with the MP3s, everybody can kind of stay up to date with what's going on. So give that a look. Unless anybody's got anything they need to bring up right now, I'll bring the meeting to a close.
Oh, good. Thanks, Jonathan.
All right. Thanks, folks.
Jonathan.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Barry.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye, all.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks, all. Take care.
At this time, all parties are welcome to go ahead and disconnect from today's conference. At this time, all parties are welcome to go ahead and disconnect from the call. Thank you for joining and have a great day. Thank you.